looking at whether governance is in fact a buzzword, and that was the title of the presentation. So I'm going to start with the question of why do we care about governance and health systems in the first place? Where does this come from? And here are some of the rationales that are given out is that essentially when we look at service delivery and health systems functioning, we find that some of the weaknesses in those areas can be traced back to this collection of issues that are referred to as health governance. And we'll talk about what some of those are and bring some clarity to that for you all if you're feeling that you're a bit fuzzy on the concept. In a lot of the health sector literature and policy debate, the element of governance that gets the most discussion has to do with corruption, which actually is something that didn't come up in the discussion here. But we can look at some other aspects as well that have to do with accountability and transparency, and we heard something about that in the Rwanda case. Weak incentives for responsiveness and performance. Professor Danso mentioned problems of lethargy and apathy in the ministry. Limited engagement of citizens in health affairs is another problem as well. So what do we mean by governance? And now I'm talking about sort of governance in general, not what's considered health governance. Essentially, when we think about governance, we're looking at authority relationships among different actors, distributions of power, distributions of decision-making in four different arenas: civil society, politics, policy, and public administration. Now, if we think of governance as essentially the rules that distribute roles and responsibilities across these societal actors and shape how they interact, we can think about these in formal terms, embodied in institutions that we're all familiar with: democratic elections, parliaments, courts, sectoral ministries, anti-corruption agencies, etc. But they're also embodied in informal sets of rules, and these are reflected a lot in the way that people interact in terms of their behaviors. And some of you are probably familiar with arguments about why social capital is important. Social capital is something that can also contribute to good governance. So if we take those concepts and think about them in a governance perspective on health, we think about what are the rules in the health system that deal with the interactions between policies, programs, and activities to achieve health sector objectives, and how do different societal actors fulfill their responsibilities to carry out these roles related to achieving health objectives. So here are the broad categories of actors. Obviously, the one that we're all very familiar with is the state, politicians, policymakers, and others. For those of you who are engaged in public health service delivery, the next bullet is probably the one that you spend most of your time thinking about, which is providers. And here we can think about providers in a variety of sectors, in the government, in the private sector, and also in the nonprofit sector. And then the third group has to do with the people who use the services that are provided, citizens, clients, beneficiaries, patients, however you want to term them. Now, when we think about these different kinds of relationships among these actors, we think about a set of principles that have to do with accountability, an open policy process that gives you the proverbial level playing field, which means that no one group has an advantage over others in terms of their access to the policy debate and influence over how policies are decided and how resources are allocated. Another key feature is that you don't have health governance unless you've got a state that can actually implement the things that are decided in terms of policy. So if you need sufficient state capacity and power and legitimacy to do things. And then you need engagement and participation of non-state actors. So here's our nifty model. You've got the three sets of actors. You've got the state, you have providers, and citizens and clients. And the arrows there essentially characterize the relationships among them. Now, some of you who may be familiar with the World Bank's 2004 World Development Report, making services available to the poor, will recognize the structure of this model, and we base our governance model on that. So the arrows essentially describe what the nature, in broad terms, are of the relationships among the different actors are. So you can see that in terms of citizens vis-a-vis the state is essentially exercising voice, trying to get their preferences expressed to policymakers, to those who allocate resources, and in response, assuming that we have a good governance situation where the state is actually interested in responding to its citizens, you get responsiveness. And I won't go through the others, but in the interest of time, but if people have questions, we can talk about some of the other ones. Just one other point. This drawing shows all of these nodes in the governance model as the same size. Now, I think we know that that's not the case. Obviously, the state, in terms of the power and resources that they wield, is much bigger and much more powerful than the other two. So don't think that this is sort of meaning that everybody has equal play in the health system and in the governance of that system. So this just illustrates a few of the challenges that come up when we think about dealing with some of the problems related to health governance in each of those four institutional areas that I mentioned before. And again, I won't go through a lot of these. You can just take a look at them, assuming your eyesight's really good. The presentation, I think, is available online as well. So what's good health governance? Here are some of the things that both in the literature and practitioners talk about. You want, obviously, a system that's responsive to public health needs and to what people want. You want responsible leadership that addresses health priorities. You want citizens and service users to have the ability to exercise voice, to express their views about what services are being provided or what are not being provided. You want institutional checks and balances. So you want ways that can enforce the accountability. And I think the example from Rwanda is a good one of showing how we can come up with mechanisms to do that. And the whole sort of pay-for-performance mechanism is a good example of a way to try to implement checks and balances. You want clear and enforceable accountability, and there again, taking off from that World Bank document where they talk about the short route of accountability, which is directly between providers and clients, and the long route, which essentially goes up through legislators and parliaments, down to the health ministry, down to providers, and then eventually back to the clients. You want transparency. You want to have transparency around what the policies are, how the resources are being allocated, how much is being allocated, and also around performance. We want what we hear a lot about, the ideal of evidence-based policymaking. You want people making decisions about health resources not based on what they think they heard or what they feel is a good idea, but based on some evidence about what works and what doesn't. And you essentially want effective and efficient service provision arrangements that are guided by broad regulatory frameworks and management systems that work. So that's kind of a tall order, and obviously if we had all that nifty stuff, we'd be in great shape in developing countries, and we'd be in great shape in the U.S. So, I mean, this stuff doesn't work so well in the U.S. either. There are certainly problems around that, so we're certainly not kind of holding up industrialized countries as the be-all and end-all. These kinds of issues affect health systems any place. So what can we do? Here are three broad categories of answers to how to strengthen health governance. One, you can focus on improving the policy process and a variety of ways of doing that. Remember I talked about that level playing field in many countries, including here. We don't have a level playing field. Certain people have a lot more access to decision makers, politicians, and public officials than others. So one of the things that can be tried is to try to shift that balance a little bit, get more input from citizens, more input from those who don't tend to normally have a voice. We can strengthen the leadership of the Ministry of Health. help them to use data and evidence more effectively, and then also provide information to the public on rights and duties. So one of the things that has been done, for example, in places like Uganda, where decentralization has been undertaken, is the amounts of money that are allocated from the center to the various districts is made public so that people can know and find out what's being spent. So, for example, if you go to local schools in Uganda, you find a piece of paper tacked to the school door that says how much money has been sent to the district for schools, similarly for health. You can enhance participation at a variety of levels. That has to do some with that level playing field, but also engaging more in terms of oversight. Some of you are probably familiar with things like citizen report cards, efforts to bring in the views of people around what services they like, how services are provided, things of that nature. And then this broad category of addressing issues around accountability and transparency and reducing corruption. I work on a project that's funded by donors, USAID, and USAID is quite interested in, well, what can we do? How can donors be effective in helping to promote interventions that will improve health governance? And what we suggest are, first of all, that there are a number of principles for that program. And the first one, and I think the presentation by Dr. Danto is a good example of this, is that if you don't have a committed leader, if you don't have political will, people who want to do stuff, you're not going to get very far. That doesn't apply only to health governance. That applies pretty much to almost any kind of intervention. But I think it's particularly true around governance issues because they go so deeply into the structure of society and the relationships between citizens and the state and healthcare providers. You also need to balance supply-side interventions with support for demand. And I think one of the classic things that we see in a lot of donor assistance is if you spend your time inside the ministry building up the drug supply system, the budgeting system, and all of that, that's great and that's necessary. But what then are the incentives to use that? And that's where you're thinking about where does the demand come to use that kind of stuff? You develop a nifty information system. Who's going to use that information? Who really wants it? Sometimes we worry that maybe it's only the donors who want that stuff, WHO and AID and the World Bank. You have to have someone in the country who wants that stuff. So there has to be a focus on both supplying innovations and also the demand for using what those innovations are supposed to do. Another feature of our project is to integrate looking at the governance issues, looking at financing. I think Hugh's presentation is a good example. He sort of wondered if it related to governance. I think it really very much relates to governance. Operations, some of the problems that I referred to have to do with the functioning of the health system. And then also, obviously, capacity building is an important part. And based on those principles, we can then come up with some programming options. The Rwanda one is a very good example, and there are many other countries that are trying that performance-based approach. There's some very interesting emerging experience on that. Some of the other areas that we're working in Health Systems 2020, many of you are probably familiar with national health accounts, which is essentially a way of collecting information and analyzing it to take account of what resources are flowing into the system from what sources. One of the issues there is that information has tended to stop within the ministry. It's used mostly by technical people. There's not really been very much emphasis on, well, what might citizens want to know about how the structure of health financing is in their country. So we're working on those kinds of issues. I'll stop there and give ourselves a few minutes for some questions. So thank you very much.
So a lot to absorb, assimilate, integrate, but I'm sure you have questions. So we'd like to open the floor now for the next 15, 20 minutes for some questions to the panel as a whole or to individual panelists. So. stunned. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, there we go. Okay. So maybe we'll try first from colleagues from Rwanda, and then we'll let Derek answer that second part of that question. Or, yeah. Yeah. Antoinette? Yes.
Government is now trying to put in place a joint action forum for the
experience in the decentralization process in Ghana. What was there a civil society and a participatory process from the population that was involved in developing sort of the kind of the structure and or giving legitimacy to this major structural change in the way health services were being organized and delivered? And did that make a difference, either because it was there or it wasn't there? Could you speak a little bit?
Yeah, definitely.
There were two aspects of the health sector reform in mm-hmm. Ghana. We have the political administrative side for the nation, and then the health sector as a specific issue. And the reason for decentralizing it was to make provision for the involvement of NGOs and the private sector communities, especially when we broke down the health sector from the national level to the regional level to the district level and then to the town and village levels. As I indicated, the country was divided into 110 districts, and each of these districts was supposed to have a district health management team. And decisions and laws and regulations in the district health management teams had to be made together with so-called district assemblies, elected individuals who were like the legislature at the district level. And at this particular level, issues and interests were aggregated from these smaller units, deliberated upon in the legislative assemblies, the district level, all the way up to the national level. So yes, of course, there was the whole purpose of doing this was to infuse into the entire health sector network the involvement of communities, whether at the national level, at the village level, or at the regional level. So of course, citizen participation was in terms of formulating the policies. No, this was more or less a top-down type of policy making. There wasn't that much grassroots involvement. All citizens had was, we have a new law, we're going to break down the health sector into a policy making Ministry of Health and then a policy implementing Ghana Health Service. And I think if we were to take a poll now, the majority of the citizens have no clue as to how these units were supposed to work together.
So that would have made a change in the approach, would that have made a difference?
Definitely would have made a difference. But again, in a lot of third world countries, what is designed on paper is normally not what is implemented in the real world.
Thank you. Any other questions, please?
Which is tech. We have these two sectors,
take another. Time for one more question, which will bring us to 4 o'clock from the back. We'll try two, since yes, please. First, the gentleman there. So let's try to answer that briefly, because we're sort of because we do want to give. We have one more question. So let's, Dr. Danza, we'll start with you, and then we'll just get some input from the rest of the panel.
Thank you.
it's about a little after four, so I think we'll call this session to a close. I'd like to thank you all for coming. I hope you've learned a little bit more about what the word is, what the word means, why there is a buzz about it. And for further information about the subject, you can go to this website here, the Health Systems 2020, and also to the RTI website, and where you can find lots of more examples of how governance fits into the development process. And certainly for those of us working in the area of governance, we'd like to see it as one of the essential components of all health development programming. Thank you very much.